The Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, Episode 11. With 400 golf courses for only 4 million people, New Zealand has the highest amount of golf courses per capita. Hello, travel nerds, and welcome to the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, the show that teaches you how to travel more while spending less. I'm Trav, the creator of Extra Pack of Peanuts, and with me today is a man who has been writing about travel on the web since the days of Prodigy and dial-up internet, Sean Keener, founder of bootsandall.com. Sean, thanks for coming on the show and welcome.
Stoked to be here, Travis. Thanks for having me.
Sean, your story and the Boots and All story as a whole is incredibly interesting, and I want to touch on that shortly. But first, you've got a lot of stuff going on at Boots and All. So could you tell people kind of what Boots and All is and what it provides for travelers?
Totally. So it started about 15 years ago. We have a suite of services for independent, or what we call indie, travelers. And it starts with content. We have about 15,000 expert exclusive written content that we developed over the past 15 years for people that focus on long-term travel. Secondly, we have a community of like-minded folks that want to do long-term travel, folks that are dreaming it on a trip, and alumni is what we call them. And then lastly, we have all sorts of commerce around long-term travel, from Indy, the world's first around-the-world ticket search engine, to all the booking facilities and travel insurance and things that long-term travelers need. Of course, you don't need to use all these services. As you know, you can use frequent flyer miles.
Right.
You can camp on the side of the road. You can house sit, and we fully support those ideas as well. There's just, to us, there's not one right way to do it. The main thing is to do it.
I couldn't have said it better. And one of the things you mentioned, and this is completely unique to Boots and All, is the indie multi-country flight finder. And that's fairly new, I think. How does that work?
It is. We launched that in January.
Okay.
So we work with Airtrex for many years, and they do a good job of that as well. And I'd always ask them, why can't this be automated? You know, why can't someone book this online? Why can't we get an instant price? Why can't this be bookable online? You know, you think that you could buy everything on the internet now, but you still can't buy some things. And at least to this point, you cannot book in most cases more than a six stop itinerary on the internet. You can, if you're really smart, do it on the Star Alliance if you know when the flights are leaving. But you know, we don't just do the alliances. We have low cost airlines, and of course we have instant pricing. Bam, 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 bam. So it's a lot of fun, and it's a good quick way to get an idea of budget. Of course, you can use your frequent flyer miles, not necessarily with us, but you can use legs for frequent flyers. So if you decide you want to go from London, your first two legs you want to do with frequent flyers, you can do that. Then do one ways from there. So yeah, that's a little bit about that product.
So you can actually then go on to Indy, onto your site, and use the Indy search engine, and you can book something directly from there, right? Without travel agents or anything like that.
Yeah. You can talk to, we have some what we call travel agents that you can talk to, but you don't have to talk to anyone if you don't want to. And you know, provided it has five legs or more, once you get to the second screen, you can look at all the different flight options there and decide, I don't want to fly Spirit Air, you know, which some people don't. Yeah. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with it, but you know, it is totally low cost. And at my stage in life, I think it's ghetto. Now it's fine though, right? I mean, if you don't have anything and you want to get that $10 flight or whatever it is, go for it.
Right.
Right. You know, and then even better, if you have 25, 50, 100,000 miles, you might be able to book an alliance first class going somewhere overseas, which is even more exciting.
Right. Yeah. I think that Indy is a really cool tool. I haven't used it because I haven't need to book around the world ticket as of now. But back before I even knew about frequent flyer miles, I heard people talking about around the world tickets a lot on Boots and All and just around the internet. I always thought that would be awesome. And air checks. And I think there's like another, it's like two companies that you could do it. And I'd send them an email and they'd get back to me later. But it was just a very long, arduous process. You know, why couldn't I go and just, I want to go here. And, you know, here's the price. Obviously, the technology was there in some form, but it's cool that you guys put it all together.
Yeah, we finally figured it out. It's a lot of fun. And, you know, it definitely differentiates us. You know, not everybody wants to do this, Travis, and we get that. But we think everybody should do a long-term trip at some point in their life because it really is the best way to learn.
Yeah. Yeah, and for the people who do, you have the tool, you know.
Yeah. And you don't have to fly either. I mean, you know, we know people that ride their bike. My cousin was just here this morning, 18 years old. He's riding a motorbike around the United States.
Yeah.
For a month. Now, that's, you know, that doesn't involve frequent flyer miles or overseas, but what a neat way to see the country.
Yeah.
You know, there's no barriers between you. He's meeting people from all over. What a cool way to do some independent travel as a young person. So,
yeah, I think you said it perfect in the beginning. It's just doing it. Whatever it is. In terms of travel, it's doing it. Whether you want to fly in first class all over the world or you want to take a motorbike or a bike or walk, get out and do it. And I know you're a big advocate of that. I've read your company's timeline at least six or seven times at this point because I just I think it's so neat. And it's a phenomenal story. So could you give listeners a little bit of like the highlights of the founding and the growth of Boots and All?
Totally. So back in, was it 1994, co-founder Chris Heidrick, who's an Australian, and I went with some friends over to Europe, and we went there for the European football tournament. Actually, it was Euro 96. I'm sorry.
Okay.
The years are getting mixed up in my head, Travis. But
it's a long time away.
Yeah, that was my first true independent travel experience, and I ended up going overland from Europe to India. It took me about 8 months, and you know, I realized how awesome travel was at the time. And of course, this, you know, we had email at the time, but the people that you meet are just that. That's what makes travel after a while. You get kind of sucked in by the Eiffel Tower and all these, whatever these sites. But at the end of the day, it's about people.
Yeah.
And after connecting with people over that year, Chris and I, this was the dot-com boom days. We just set up a website called Boots and All and kind of put up our what we call our code of conduct, what we thought independent travel was about. And it was pretty hardcore. You had to be a guy. You had to have facial hair.
Yeah.
There were some swear words in it. And people started signing up. We didn't really know what they were signing up for. But you know, I was young. I was 24 or 25 at the time. And I said, you know what? Why not just go for it? There's got to, you know, you could kind of sense in the late 90s, this internet thing might really stick, you know.
And surprising.
Yeah, we just kept building and trying to connect with people, and we had a lot of missteps over the years, but a lot of successes too. And we stayed private all this time, but just kind of trying to connect and cultivate an organic community that encourages independent travel. So that's the overarching story. Like you said, on the timeline, you can read more details. We did lots of interesting, fun things. And
What about your bike route? I think that's a pretty cool story.
Right. I forgot about that. Well, I haven't forgot about that. If you see where my finger is pointed right there, that is our satchel that Chris and I used to deliver the Register Guard in Eugene, Oregon. We would deliver about 250 newspapers every morning from about 3:45 to 6:15 in the rain on our bicycles.
Wow.
That generated $800 to $1,000 a month, which allowed us to live and work on Boots and All 12, you know, pretty much 10 to 12 hours a day. I mean,
right.
We were so in love with it because connecting with people and what travel's all about was, it still is very important, but we could live on so little back then and just kept going until we can kind of figure out some sustainability behind it. And we're still small. We're a 10-person company. We're not, I've never taken investment dollars or anything like that. So we're kind of, much like a lot of the travel bloggers out there, except maybe we're, you know, a little bit more business behind us because we've been around for a while. So,
You were bootstrapping your business before bootstrapping was really a term.
Totally. Yeah. And we still are in many ways, you know, cause I, you know, to build the indie product, we had to figure it out, right?
Right.
I didn't go the hipmunk route and go get $20 million to try to build something cool.
Right.
We just built it and figured it out, and no one had done it before. I can see why. There's some very complicated things to make something like that work. Because, you know, Orbitz, Expedia, those guys, they ignore those travelers.
Sure. And you really, you have to really believe in your message. I mean, like you said, you're making $1,000 a month. You're living off peanuts. And you know, you have this idea, and it's like at some point there's a breaking point, like, all right, this isn't going to work, or you have to push past, this might not work, and just say, I'm going to make it work. And it seems like you've done that.
We have. And it's been 15 years now. We're kind of entering our 15th year here, and I just turned 40, and I'm still enjoying it, maybe even more than ever. I'm enjoying it. So
that's awesome.
Probably because of the difference that I see in people's lives when they do long-term independent travel. Because it changes your perspective. Travis, where are you from?
I'm from Philadelphia.
Philadelphia. Do you what neighborhood did you grow up in?
Suburban Philadelphia, an area called King of Prussia, the biggest, most stores in a single mall in all of America. So that's our claim to fame.
My guess is you probably have some neighborhood buddies.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. And much like I have neighborhood buddies in Chicago, and have some of them maybe not left Pennsylvania or the East Coast ever?
Well, yes. And my main goal for starting my site was to help friends and family just do it. You know, I'd have friends who I'm like, you would love to travel here. And they'd be like, well, it's too expensive, or well, I don't know how to do it. And I said, all right, you know what? I'm going to start a site and I'm going to explain to you how to do it. And fortunately, I have a friend who's never been out of America before this, and because I helped him earn frequent flyer miles, he's been out of the country, and it's like, it's cool. It's really cool.
Very cool, because as you know, sometimes if you don't get outside your hometown, your paradigm of the world is your hometown, which can be wonderful, but there's just lots of different ways to look at things, and it kind of, you know, you can get fearful as you get older if you don't get out.
Yeah.
And I can, you know, some of my neighborhood buddies that haven't left as much, they, you know, they think I'm, you know, doing dangerous things, encouraging people to do dangerous things. And of course, it's not really like that, you know.
No.
So that you did it, you know. So that's cool. I figured if you were from Philadelphia, you know, we all have those.
Yep.
Those pals, those old
that's
pals.
That's right. Yeah. The cool thing about travel, too, is usually once you help someone travel, it's not a really hard sell once they do it, because people go out and very few people come back like, well, that sucked. I hate traveling. I'm never going to do it. Yeah. You just got to push it, give them that first push, and then it snowballs from there usually.
I would 100% agree with that. You know, I don't know how many people we've helped. I mean, we've had over 100 million people come through our site over 15 years. It's hard for us to put a number on it, but and I'm sure there are some examples, but like you said, I haven't heard of a story who, when someone came back, said, really shouldn't have done that.
Right.
Should have gone to work more. Should have just stayed at home.
Right.
I just haven't heard that. I've heard some people say it was a challenge in some ways or stuff like that. But ultimately, the perspective of it is, man, I really got something out of that.
Yep.
I'm glad I did that.
Yep.
Some people go on like you and they can't stop. And like me, we just can't stop.
It's never going to stop.
It will never stop. It's just so it's that exploration gene that just keeps going. And when you meet more people and realize that, you know, we're just a small little piece of dust in the universe.
Yeah. One of the things that I think is interesting about that, about pushing people to travel, is I noticed in your bio, one of the first trips you took was with three Australians. And why do you think it is? You know, I've traveled a bunch now, and every time I meet Europeans or Australians, they're on these crazy adventures. It seems like they never work. Why are they so much more likely to take these long round the world or even round the continent trips as opposed to Americans, and especially young Europeans, young Australians take a year off, and Americans just don't really do that so much?
Totally. Well, there's a few reasons that I can tell, and every time I say something, I know I could be wrong. But so Chris is one of those three Australians, my business partner that I went with, still a good friend of mine. He's now in Auckland, New Zealand. But one of the primary reasons is the Commonwealth countries. Let's just talk about South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, UK.
Right.
They have these, you know, work visa arrangements that I think make it definitely easier.
Right.
So the Aussies can go over to the UK and work for 2 years. So there's, as you know, Travis, a massive community of Aussies and Kiwis in London.
Yep.
And vice versa.
Yep.
There's a bunch of Palms in Sydney. And they do these work arrangements. They'll kind of take their time getting there and then save up a bunch of coin and take a long time to come back.
Right.
So I think that cultural connection via the Queen or the English Empire has helped that. And it's just culturally accepted. Almost everybody's got an OE, an overseas experience. I'm sure there are some Australians and Kiwis that don't do it it's, of course, I don't know if I've ever met them.
Right. It's very few and far between. Every single Australian or Kiwi that I know has traveled, and maybe that's because I've met them traveling. But
I
think that work arrangement is definitely a reason. I have a bunch of friends who are Kiwis who are in London. But it's starting to break down a little bit. Americans can now get work visas in Australia a lot easier than they used to be able to, which is a great thing, I think.
Yeah. That, and of course, the location independent, nomadic, whatever movement you want to call it, which has been underway for a long time. It's just, you can work for your employer from anywhere.
Yeah.
You don't even have to have a blog.
Right.
Yeah, literally every one of my colleagues at Boots and All can be wherever they want to be.
Yeah.
I do not care. Sometimes they're going here, they're going there, wherever you want to go. Yeah. I don't care. Just make a few meetings, do your things. Yeah. If you want to do it in the middle of the night, do it in the middle of the night. Generally people work normal days, but that sort of thing allows it. If you want to move to the Philippines for 6 months, go for it.
Right. Make sure you have internet.
Exactly. And what a neat opportunity. So you almost don't need that work visa. As long as you have a tourist visa,
right,
you can go to these places. And I think some countries are starting to realize that's a valuable thing to offer people to be able to stay for 6 months a year, because they're putting money into your economy.
Right. Exactly. And I think this idea, this location independent thing started with people saying, well, I want to create my own company and do that over the internet. And now it's totally filtered out to people can work for regular brick and mortar companies and easily. The internet is so big and everyone uses it. They can, 75% of people could probably live a somewhat location independent lifestyle to some degree.
Big time. One of the things I was talking to some folks the other day that don't do it, and they said, I love coming into the office. And I actually do too. I actually love talking to people. And right now, since we're on video, Travis, this is actually better for me than if it were on the phone, because I could see your nonverbal cues and stuff like
right.
that. But at Boots and All, we do use video conferencing just like this all the time. And it makes a huge difference. I am sitting here drinking a cup of coffee with you right now.
Right.
Now, I can't smell you.
Good.
You can't smell me, right? Probably a good thing, right? But if we were to do this every day for half an hour, we would develop a familiarity. And I say it's 98% as good as actually being there in the flesh. I can't give you a hug.
Right.
I can't shake your hand or kiss you on the cheek. But it's pretty damn good.
I 100% agree.
Yeah. It's kind of amazing when you think about this. Look at this. Where am I? Where are you? And we're talking over tubes or something that Al Gore did. It's kind of cool.
It is. I've met many, many people now since I've started my website and reached out to people with a podcast and just, question and answers. And, I feel a relationship with these people almost as strongly as people that I've met, or sometimes more strongly, because they kind of you have the same ideas. You love travel, so we're instantly bonding over that. But yeah, I never come off of a podcast and think, oh man, I don't really know that person. It's almost always like, wow, I know that, I want to meet him when I go to wherever they're living. And
yeah,
I really think that business can be conducted that way. And it's really helped shape our world and really allowed us to live, take these long trips like you talk about and spend 3 months in Argentina, as opposed to I'm going to go to Buenos Aires for a week and, then I'm coming home. That's cool. It's better than nothing. But living there for three months, finding the best steak and red wine place you can't beat that.
And as oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes going there for 3 to 6 months, depending on where you're going, your cost of living could well be less.
Yes.
Than where you're at. So let's say you're, let's say a typical American salary, let's just say 45 grand a year. You're not rich, single. That can go a long way in certain many parts of the world.
Go to Thailand. You can't spend it fast enough.
Exactly. Versus if you're in LA or San Francisco, you are below the poverty line if you're in San Francisco proper. Not for sure, but it's a different existence, as you know.
Very true.
So
very true. And I think, too, when you're abroad and usually if you meet expats who are kind of trying to do the same thing, I think there's these pockets of community or pockets of communities that then will help each other. If I'm in Chiang Mai and there's, a lot of bloggers love going to Chiang Mai because it's cheap, great internet. But then you meet those people in person, you're all helping each other out, whereas you might not reach out to them if you're in Philadelphia or San Fran because everyone's the same there. So what makes you different from the guy in the next cubicle? Nothing really. But when you're in Chiang Mai and there's only 50 of you, it's an instant bond.
What a cool, what a cool little community that I hear about. I know random people that go there every year, and you can see that they're really developing bonds with each other, helping each other out, and building a little social network just there.
Right.
It's almost like seniors retiring to Florida or Arizona, except they're bloggers or location-dependent professionals going to Chiang Mai for the winter. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I totally agree. And speaking of bonds, one of the main parts of Boots On, you hit on this a little bit, is the forums and the community that you've built there. I think you have, it says in your bio, you have over 400,000 posts on the message board. I mean, that grows every day, of course. How did you grow your community, and why do you think Boots On specifically has been so successful?
Jeez, you know, success is... You know, we've had some successful things. You know, probably the biggest thing that got our community aspect going, and maybe you know about this and you're prompting me, so if you are, thank you. Before you could join Boots On, you had to apply.
Right.
And fill out a few questions. Because to us, a community is not just what can you give me, it's give and take.
Right.
So we ask someone to share a story or why they wanted to join. Now, it doesn't mean you have to be an experienced traveler, but if someone didn't fill that out, we'd ask them to tell us more and you know, quote, reject them. So there was this welcoming committee that still exists to this day in different ways and in different parts of Boots On, not just on the forums, that kind of has that host that brings you in. And we take that time. Now, this is not a way – you can't really scale this.
Right. Not at all.
You cannot scale this. And I don't necessarily want to. So, you know, some of these internet companies are like, yeah, Keener, that doesn't scale. What are you trying to do there? Well, you know, that's okay. I'm trying to build relationships.
Yeah. They take time no matter what.
They do. And sometimes the simplest little hello and because I've worked with enough people, I can probably get them on the right path. I don't know everything at all, but... sometimes just a smiling face when you walk into the room and shakes your hand or gives you a hug, essentially, is all you need to feel a little bit more comfortable and like you might be among your people, or help guide you to people that can help you or that you want to bond with. Because when you're thinking about doing this the first time, just like your friend who you helped get overseas,
right,
may not have done it if he didn't know you.
Right.
Right? So you were the connection that maybe gave him that extra little bit of confidence in how he ultimately did it. Right. But you may have been a catalyst. So it's that sort of thing that, and of course, community now on the internet, maybe you saw my 16 tips of 15 years in internet startup.
Right.
It's communities everywhere.
Yeah.
It's not just on Boots On, Lonely Planet, all these different places. You know, it's Twitter, it's Facebook, it's everywhere. So it's no one really owns this anymore. It's kind of
a normal thing. Building
it's just
a community.
It's just everywhere, right? And, you know, what do you mean building? You're a part of it. It's kind of, you know, I don't know who owns it anymore. And I think some companies want to own it.
Yeah.
You know, but it's, you know, how do you can't control people, and do you own community? I mean, it is a community.
Right.
And the community is going to do what it wants to do. So it's a... It's a funny thing from a, you know, when you think about a company standpoint, someone like, you know, I put in that post about Instagram, you know, hugely successful, growing like crazy. But when a few months ago they said, hey, all these photos are ours.
Right, right. A huge hubbub.
What? Now people forget about it and they're still growing. But I'll be interested to see 5-10 years from now what Instagram is doing with all that. Because right now it feels good. All these pictures, take pictures of yourself and your food. But. And after you have some perspective, maybe they will turn it around. But I haven't set up an account there, so I guess I'm not cool.
Well, I'm not cool either. I mean, I'm 10 years younger than you, and I'm less cool. So,
cool.
Speaking of the 15 years, how have you seen traveling change in the last 15 years? And we could talk about traveling in general. Also, the idea of travel on the internet and all the resources we have, is it good? Is it bad?
Overall, I think it's fantastic. I mean, it's, as you know, it's just been phenomenal growth. I mean, it's not even, you know, and we've been at it for 15 years and we weren't even the first.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of the folks that I started with have either gone away or kind of been consumed by TripAdvisor or other or internet brands, a lot of those companies. But, you know, what's changed? There's just more of everything.
Yeah.
Which means there's more quality, but there's also more junk.
Yeah, exactly.
Travel blogging. There's so many people doing it. I'm not even just talking about T-Mex. I'm just talking about all sorts of blogs. You know?
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Yeah, it's all over the place. So it's overall, I think it's a good thing because it's putting that information out there. But I think people need to have filters to understand why people are doing certain things.
Sure.
Just be aware that there are many times there's business objectives. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but there's a lot more business interests on the internet today than there was even 15 years ago, even with that .com boom.
Right.
And it'll probably continue to grow like that. And of course, there's all these open source movements. You say things like Wikipedia. I mean, what a cool resource.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you still give them probably, oh, it's not always accurate. Sure, it's not. But I mean,
more accurate than what's in my head, you know?
And it's, you know, Encyclopedia Britannica or whatever. And they don't even do it anymore because that is damn good enough. So I'm,
yeah.
You know, all these things are interrelated. I don't even know how to describe it, but overall I'd say it's good. And there's still a lot of opportunity for companies and people and whatnot to innovate and provide more services for travelers or whatever niche you're interested in. I think it's going narrow. I'm kind of talking a little bit business now, but it's going narrow and really appealing to that small group of people.
Right.
Instead of trying to be everything to everyone.
Yeah. And I think you made a good point. I think you have to be somewhat discerning. You know, that's, I think, one of the positives of Boots and All is you've been around for so long. It's pretty, you know, you have such a large community that would never have happened if your main goal was not to help people travel and to, you know, take their knowledge, take your knowledge, and put it all together. I think, you know, if you have a little bit of discernment, you're going to sniff out people who are there just for business, and then you're going to find the people at some point who are genuine. And, they might have a good business behind it. That doesn't, you know, you don't have to be a bad business person, but,
you know,
and Boots and All, obviously, 15 years in, you have a huge community there. You know, when you go there, you can see what you're doing right away, and you keep kind of trying to push the envelope with the indie thing and with Twitter chats and all. So
I like that word discernment that you talk about. It's just because there's so much information, I think you have to have a filter or a sense of discernment. Otherwise it's, you know, it is drinking out of a fire hydrant. And you know, how are you going to use this information? Are you just consuming it and it doesn't impact you? I mean, sometimes I think about Twitter and I think, you know, I actually enjoy it and, you know, interact and maybe sometimes build some meaningful connections there, especially on things like a Twitter chat. I don't know if you can hear one of my kids crying upstairs.
No, only a little bit.
Okay. Just a little bit. Okay.
Only one of them's crying. That's fine.
Right now, yeah. you know, when I think sometimes about all the things I read on Twitter, I mean, is there anything that I made a decision on based from Twitter? I don't know. I'd have to think about it. And I like Twitter. We use Twitter. It's so much information sometimes. One of the things I mentioned on the This Week in Travel podcast last week when I was talking to Jen and Chris just about taking a digital Sabbath, which is, you know, one day a week. It feels good to just turn everything off.
Right.
Tablets, phones, TVs for 24 hours. Even if it's just 24 hours, it just feels good. So when you come back on, it's like, wait a minute, do I need all this? Because
right.
I mean, it's always more email. It's always more this. And, you know, sometimes here's something about travel. You said, you know, how has it changed? Well, just the access to information has us looking like this instead of looking like this.
Yes. I've found myself doing that. Everyone does it. And I'm on my phone looking for directions or, you know, what's the best restaurant to eat at? And I'm on my phone. I'm like, well, why don't I ask the guy right there? Is he a local? Probably.
Or just look.
Yes.
Smell.
Wander in. Yeah.
Why is there a line out that door? Maybe it's good. You know,
right.
Why is that place empty and look like a garbage hole? I mean, you know, it's all those sorts of things. So there's positives and negatives, right?
Yeah.
So overall, I think it is good, though. I think it is. Because getting information to people, it starts freeing their mind, so to speak, in the matrix sort of way.
Right.
Free mind or whatever you want to call it. But So overall, it's a good thing that people get information on how to do stuff and probably shatter barriers that they may have built up in their mind.
Yeah, I found that, like you said, there I've had to make myself, like, you know, every morning I wake up and first thing I want to do is check my phone for my email. And the days that I don't do it and I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm going to be interviewing Sean. I have to sit down and write down questions and do background stuff. The days I do that first and then maybe check my email at noon, I get so much more done because my mind is not clogged with 1,000 things like, well, I got to respond to this email and then I'm trying to do other stuff. And I know that. And yet I still have this urge when I wake up. Like, yeah. I have to check it. What if something important is emailed to me? There's nothing important emailed to me. You know, not that they can't wait 3 hours usually.
Exactly. And you probably feel better that you did something that productive. You talk about that feeling. I read something on the internet in the past 6 months about they did a study. Who's they? I don't know.
Right.
You know, I should probably find it. But every time every time we get a text message or email, there's some sort of endorphin that pops in our mind that you feel good.
Yeah. Someone likes you.
Someone is paying attention to me.
Right.
You know, someone wrote a blog post about me or whatever. It could, you know, it just feels good. So there is some sort of physiological, emotional thing that makes us want to do that.
Yeah.
So it's that, you know, it's almost like a drug in some ways, but it's a natural drug.
Yeah. And I've had to, when I travel, say, you know, doing research is great. I love researching stuff, but there has been times where I've had to say, all right, you know, like, get out of the hostel that you're in and where you're researching where to eat tonight, like we've said, and ask someone or just go out and do it. And, you know, even me who knows that in my brain that I should be doing it, you still get this, you know, feeling of like, well, what if I always think, well, what if I eat at the wrong place? Is there really a wrong place? I mean, I guess if I get sick, maybe I made a bad decision.
Right.
But, you know, it's those times where you've just been wandering around and I'm sure you've had this a thousand times.
Yeah.
And you find this little place and you eat there and you're like, even if the food's not good or what you did isn't that fun, it's cool because you're the only one there. You found it on your own.
Yeah, or just having the freedom to let go.
Yeah.
I think that's it's to let go of all those connections and to say, where can I wander here? Where is my energy to be a little bit hippy-dippy?
Right.
You know, I'm from the Midwest, so that's a little bit weird to say that sort of thing too. You know, but it's where's my energy going to take me today, and have the freedom to, and maybe confidence to let go that, hey, if I don't follow Yelp, that's okay.
Right.
You know, so stuff like that. So,
yeah. I think that
stuff.
It harkens back to that long-term travel or taking longer than a week. Cause if you do have a week, you're trying to rush everything in. And like you said, I call it kind of like the Facebook travel of like, I'm at the Eiffel Tower, I'm here, and everyone thinks that's amazing, but you don't have those real authentic experiences because you don't have time. And when I lived in Japan, that's how the Japanese travel. It's like they'll go to Australia for 3 days.
Three days
to Australia. It's like, well, we went to Sydney for a day, then we went to Melbourne, then we flew up to Cairns and went to Great Barrier Reef. I'm like, you guys are crazy, you know, and they hop in a bus, hop off a bus, and then, you know, the Australians are looking at me saying, you're only here for 3 weeks? What's wrong with you? And the Japanese are like, you're there for 3 weeks? How can you do that? So
yeah, it's a matter of perspective, isn't it?
It completely is. It completely is. And
yeah, the more
time you have, the more you can allow yourself to let go because you're not trying to rush everything. You're not trying to see Australia in a week or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I mean, you could spend years there and you're not going to see it, much like the United States of America, Travis. I mean, I haven't seen this country, right? I've been to many parts of it, but still it's also changing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, when I go back to my hometown of Chicago, you know, people are older, there's new buildings, you know, the culture is changing, there's new politics, there's new this, you know, things that were not acceptable 20 years ago are acceptable now.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't follow it much, but there's a ruling the other night, something about the Supreme Court. I don't fully understand it, but you know, these are things that are happening that, you know, it's, you know, to me, it's a good thing. But you know, 20 years ago, that would have been like, whoa, that's just not cool.
It's
stuff.
I forget. It was another podcast and I can't remember exactly who it was, but it was this whole idea of you can't, I think it was Gary Arndt. And he was saying like, you can't see Ireland or be done with Ireland. And we think that like, oh, I've been to 25 countries and like, that's cool. I want to keep going to more countries or however many I've been to, but I would definitely go back. I'd go back to Thailand in a heartbeat. I'd go back almost everywhere I've been in a heartbeat because there's so much more to see.
And that's where it comes back to people for me is because when you develop relationships with people there, and I'm not talking about love relationships, you know, because I'm married now, but just, right. but if you're a single, are you, I don't know if you're a single.
I'm married as well too. So okay, love relationships are out of the realm now.
Besides your primary one. Right.
Right.
But,
right.
Just the relationships that you develop with people there. I mean, you know, it's friends after a while that make me want to go back, or a certain type of people that, you know, Ireland has a reputation for its people and the friendly drinking culture. And, you know, why would you only want to do that once?
Right. I've had my Guinness. That's enough. Yeah. But Guinness is good.
Yeah. So having said that, I don't know if there's a right or I'm hesitant to say there's a right or wrong way.
For sure.
You know, I would say as long as you're not hurting anyone, you know, there might be some more kind of sustainable ways to do it because, you know, obviously the more you travel or potentially greenhouse, blah, blah, blah. I don't, you know.
Right.
You know, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. That's,
right.
That's kind of what I like, Newton's law.
Yeah. So, and cool. Most of what's written at Boots and All is an amazing resource for this is ways to save money while you're traveling, because you're talking about long-term travel and most people who are doing it are not going to be wealthy people, you know, going off for a year. It's usually young, but it can be, you know, people middle age or whatever, and they want to travel more. So the more they save, the longer they can travel, what have you, you know, it's cyclical there.
Sure.
What are some ways that you save money when traveling? What are some of your best tips? I know you've probably forgotten more than most people even know, but, what do you do to save money when traveling? What do you recommend?
Well, there's so many different parts. There's the how am I going to get there?
Right.
Where am I going to stay? And what I'm going to do? Those are kind of the three main things. So, you know, how am I going to get there? You know, think about all the transportation modes. When it comes to airplanes, you know, frequent flyer miles are a way to definitely save money. And then there's a whole bunch of flight hacking ideas about when to travel and where to travel.
Sure.
You know, let's just say you can go around the world for, you know, as little as $2,000, three or four stops. So, you know, that is a way to start, or you can just get on your bicycle and go.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, I mean, there's a guy, Alistair Humphreys, maybe, I don't know if you've ever seen
him. Yeah, I know Alistair, yeah.
I was just looking at my photos the other day, and he was visiting us here 10 years ago when he was on his round-the-world bicycle journey. I have a picture of him in front of the boot bus, and I was like, I got to put that up and show it to them. But I mean, he literally walked out his door and just went.
Yeah.
And I don't think he had much money.
No.
You know, maybe a few thousand pounds, maybe. So there's that. Then, you know, where am I going to stay? Of course, we looked at the TripAdvisor cheapest index a few weeks ago. And, of course, they think $152 is the cheapest city in the world.
Right.
You know, and of course, their idea is a 4-star hotel,
yep,
3-star dinner, taxi, and all this sort of stuff. So staying in... you mentioned earlier house sitting.
Right.
Of course, there's some Airbnb renting rooms. Hostels are a fantastic way to meet other travelers, have a kitchen, and an environment that's just very welcoming for travelers. And these have been around for a long time now, and they probably will they'll withstand all the changes that are going on in the accommodation market. You know, things like Airbnb appear to be very disruptive.
Right.
You know, sometimes the hotels, it seem like they're getting a little bit up in arms about it. So things like that for where you're staying. Then what are you going to do? You know, usually if you just go to a place, you're going to get a better price.
Yeah, than booking ahead of time.
Before. Now, if you have 3 months in a place, you're fine. Now, if you only do have 2 weeks to do Machu Picchu or something like that, you probably want to book it in advance.
Right. Make sure you have it and you're doing it.
And there's nothing wrong with that, right?
Not at all.
Because you're paying for someone to make sure it goes well. Because do you really want to spend 2 days negotiating with someone?
Right.
And you don't always know who they are. Excuse me. You could be getting someone that is not a reputable provider. So those are some general tips. But, you know, I always say you probably don't need any money to do it if you're really aggressive.
Well, sure. Yeah.
You know, like hitching, sleeping on the side of the road.
Right. Couch surfing.
I didn't even mention that. Obviously, that's, you know, a huge resource for lowering your costs. Of course, when you couch surf, I think you have to think about, I need to give back to the people there.
Right.
It's not really free, right? I mean, in my mind.
Yeah, if you're a jerk, it can be.
True. So it should be, you know, how can I, you know, do the people there want to talk to me?
Right.
You know, you can't just say, hey, later, I'm going.
Right. Of course.
You know, or, you know, you're going to make them dinner, buy them a bottle of wine, buy them a case of, or six pack of beer or something. I mean, it's, you know, it's a give and take sort of scenario in my perspective.
Yeah.
So those are some ways to do it. And, you know, you pack of peanuts, as I'm looking through here, the more I look at it, you have a lot of ideas too on how to save money. So
yeah, that is the goal. And it is, you know, I'm a huge proponent of hostels over hotels. Not that if you stay at a hotel, fine. If you have hotel points, fine. I've done it. No big deal. But I love the hostel or local guest house because, like you said, you're meeting other travelers. It's going to be a more friendly environment. People used to think, oh, I have to be 18 or 22 and it's dingy. And, you know, there are plenty of luxury hostels I've stayed in now that are nicer, more unique than hotels.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You're usually giving back to the local community. Usually they're run by someone there.
Big time. Good point. I didn't even mention you're thinking locally. It's not just hire food local. It's, you know, can you get your accommodation locally?
Right.
Versus the big chains, Marriott and whatnot like that.
And
that's so cool.
Yeah, they look cool sometimes, and they are cool. You know, a $300 Marriott in Bali, yeah, I'm sure I'd have a fine time there. But, you know, a $25 place for me and my wife with a pool and a guy who I'm still friends with and who serves me a local Balinese drink when I get there, like, that's different, right? I mean, so I think that, like you said, there's tons of ways to save money. And if your goal is to travel more, then saving money helps because then you just push it to the next thing you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned $25 a day for a place to stay at. You know, you and I are familiar that there are places that are, it's almost mind-boggling when you come from America that some places could be that cheap.
Yes.
You don't even get it. I remember this place I stayed in India. Now, this was in 97. It was, you know, 60 cents a night. Now, that was 15 years ago.
Sure.
Right?
So it might be up to $3 or $6.
Or something like that. Yeah, but it's like, you know, it's not $100 a night. And it's fine. It's not luxury. It is a clean bed.
Yes.
There's a clean shower. There's a hole in the ground to go to the bathroom in. But, you know, you're at a little beach community. I mean, it could be quite inexpensive.
Yeah.
And allow you to slow down for a minute. Get off the hamster wheel. Think about, what am I doing?
Right.
You know, because sometimes you're just going, go to college, get a job. You know, so after a while, it's like, you know, not there's anything wrong with those things. That's, you know, in some ways how our economy runs, I suppose. But, you know, what do I want to do? How can I add more value to the world?
Yeah. Yeah. And
you never think about and ask yourself those questions. And if you're on the hamster wheel, sometimes you don't ask that question.
No.
So,
if people are getting value out of you, like the company maybe, but are you really getting value out of them? And are you providing that value to more people? And I think people like me and you, that's what my site is about. I mean, sure, I could easily rack up, well, I do rack up frequent flyer miles and travel on my own all over. That's fine, or with my wife. I can't travel on my own. She'd kill me. But, you know, why do I have this desire to tell other people, you know, who I'm not getting anything really out of it except for the fact that I learned it from someone. I want to pass that along. You know, I know something that other people can benefit from. Why wouldn't I share that, really?
Yeah. And that's one way you're giving back. And, you know, you're just starting probably the past few years. I didn't look at your – when
did
you
start? Yeah, it's been about a year and a half at this point.
Yeah, I mean, and who knows where it's going to go.
Right.
I think that's the big thing. You opened up this door and you're walking through it and you're going to learn things, meet people, and, you know, you may see other ways down the road to add value. Just like when I started Bootsaw, I had no idea – at all that
right.
We reach this many people.
Sure.
I mean, we just want, you know, Chris and I's business model was, yeah, if we got 1,000 people to pay a subscription of $50 a year.
Right. We're rolling
We'll be able to travel forever. You know, that was really what we wanted to do. Of course, didn't work out like that at all. But we had to walk through that door to see what was on the other side. And then we learned, met other people, slowly figured things out, made a bunch of mistakes as well.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's fun.
It is. It's starting, whether it's traveling or business, it's starting something I never envisioned when I started. I remember I wrote a goal of help 10 people who aren't my family or friends earn frequent flyer miles. And like, you know, I remember thinking like, am I going to be able to do this in a year? It was supposed to be, I started January 1st. So can I do it by, and obviously, you know, within, I don't know, within a month that it happened and, you know, it's been, it's in the thousands now or whatever. Good. I don't even know how to quantify it, but sure. You know, and I never thought I'd have a podcast where then I'd be talking to you, Gary Arndt, like people who I've looked up to and respected and have helped me, you know, now hopefully I have a podcast. You agree to come on the show out of the blue. That's awesome. Yeah. Someone's going to get value from us, you know, chit-chatting totally. About travel. So totally. It is just starting something, whether it's getting out the door and traveling or getting out and starting a website or your own company, whatever it is, just start and
just do it. Just try. Right. Walk through that door. Right. One of the things you mentioned about that is 2 years ago, I did a talk at TBEX.
Okay.
This was in Vancouver, and I actually put it up on the Boots and All YouTube account. It's 17 minutes, so it's, you know, it's a TED Talk length. I can't say it's as good as a TED Talk. But one of the things I remember saying there is that someone in this room, many people in this room, this was 2 years ago, you know, no one knows who you are.
Right.
You could be the biggest thing. You could add a lot of value.
Sure.
To travelers, and we don't even know who you are right now.
Right.
That's the potential that everyone has here. It's just finding what is your message and what value do you want to bring
right.
to whatever market you want to do. So when you say, you know, it's only been a year and a half, think about that. I mean, and it's the same thing with people that might be listening to this. Maybe you haven't even started anything. You haven't even walked out the door. You have a job at Intel or right. whatever. And you're just like, geez, I want to try this. Well, 6 months from now, 3 months from now, you could be literally on the road. You just have to make that choice.
Yeah.
And yeah. let go of the fears. Things like that.
One of the amazing things, and I'm sure you get it too, like I have people coming to me say, your website's helped me. I want to start a website. How do I do this, this, and this? A year and a half ago, I didn't know how to start a website. I don't have any background, but I can give them help. I can say, here's what you got to do. You know, not as much technical help as they might need completely, but ideas of how can you get readers and this and that. And it's funny to me because to me, I'm still just me with my little old travel blog that's now grown to some degree, and it's just neat giving back and helping people. And
totally,
yeah. So,
well, congratulations on that, Travis. That's awesome that you stick with it. And you know, I would just say stick with it and keep trying to figure out how can I add value.
Of course,
and you know what can you be number one in the world at?
Right, that's right. Really what is your expertise? And you guys at Boots and All. You have, like you said, you have a suite of things, but your expertise is this round the world travel and going more than five or six segments, and you do it better than anyone else.
I think so. You know, I'm open to looking at other places, but we've been doing it for so long. It feels like, obviously I'm biased. So if you're out there and you think there's a place that,
let us know.
Long-term independent travel, I want to know.
Sure.
And because we link to everybody and anyone. It's just, it's you know, I just think, you know, I don't want to go competing with TripAdvisor. I'll tell you that much.
Right. You know, and that's not the goal.
If you're getting into hotel reviews, I mean, you are fighting a billion-dollar company that is very, very good. So it's, you know, find something, your niche that you can be known for.
Yeah.
And build products and services or just value.
Yeah.
One way or the other. There's a way to do it. So.
Yeah. Personally speaking, what is your history of traveling? Where did your desire to travel come from? Did you travel a lot as a kid? Was that ingrained in you, or did it start when you took that first trip when you were 18 or 19? Or,
well, let's see. I knew I wanted. I don't know why. When I graduated from high school, I wanted to do a road trip around the United States on a Greyhound bus. They had this Greyhound bus pass that was like $270, and you can like ride as much as you wanted to for a month or two. And I didn't have the golden ticket. Is that what it was called?
No, I'm just saying, like, in your 18-year-old mind, that was the best thing ever,
and
right?
It sounded like something really neat. And I tried to get some friends to come with me. No one would. They thought it was crazy. And I didn't have the confidence to do it. But I was a lifeguard during the summer in Chicago, and some of the older lifeguards would tell me, hey, you know, oh, I studied overseas this semester. I said, oh, really? That sounds interesting. You know, it sounds like a way to possibly do it. And then mom said, you know, Sean, why don't you look into do it? And so really my parents, I heard it from some other people, just like maybe you heard about flight hacking from someone.
Sure.
And I went to Australia for a year as a student, one full year. And I remember I was in a fraternity at the time, and I told all my fraternity buddies, yeah, I'm going to Australia for a year. I'm so cool. Check me out. And then I remember waving goodbye to my family on the plane thinking, holy shit, right. What am I doing?
Right. Do they speak English there? What's happening?
Well, I had no idea. I mean, I lived in a hostel there for a few weeks before I found a place to live and stuff. And that's where my paradigm for travel really opened up. To me, travel, if you got 2 weeks in a row, you are amazing. That was, I didn't, you know, and then I met these, of course, Aussies.
And of course.
England and folks from England that were traveling for 2 years. And I thought, how in God's name does this happen?
Yeah.
How can you afford this? You're 25 years old. Of course, you meet the people, you see how they do it, you realize that it doesn't cost $100 a night everywhere. Right. You go to India, all these places. So that's where I started, was that overseas experience of studying abroad. And then, of course, I met some Australian friends there that did the boots and all trip in 96. So
okay.
I just can't stop, Travis. I just can't stop. How about you? How did you get into it? What was your...
I tell people my first real freedom, taste of freedom, was at 18, and my sister was moving to Florida to my twin sisters, who were both 18. She was going to do her freshman year in Palm Beach Atlantic in West Palm. And my mom, she had too much stuff. So my mom was going to fly down with her. She's like, do you want to drive down and bring her stuff? And I thought, okay, sure, right? So I got my best friend to come with me. We loaded up. Within 15 minutes, we hadn't hit the highway. We didn't know which way to go, east or west, to get onto 95 south. We're like, do we get on 76 east or west? We called up his dad. He's like, you left like 15 minutes ago, right? We're like, yeah. He's like, you're not going to make it. But, you know, we did this trip. It was amazing. We had no plans. Yeah, we had to get back for college, but it started like a month later or something. So really, we were just going, and that was my first taste of freedom, but I still hadn't gone internationally. And to me, that still resonates, though, as my first real travel. And I came back from that like, oh, my gosh, the world is so big. Like, it was a 12-hour trip to Florida, you know? And internationally, the first time, not counting Canada, was when I went to Paris, and my parents basically made me go to rehab a church there. And I didn't want to go. I don't remember why. I was 21. And I wanted to be around my buddies in college, right? Like, oh, I'm going to miss this, and this over winter break. And I went on that trip, and I was like, oh, you are retarded, Travis. Like, what? You were going to miss that? And and then what really bit me as like, okay, I need to live a life of travel was when I lived abroad in Switzerland for four months, wow. And I did an internship. And that was only actually 2009. I had traveled some, but I did an internship in Switzerland after I did my master's degree. And I was living in Lausanne, Switzerland, and I just thought, this is amazing. Like, I'm not here for 2 weeks, I'm here for 4 months, and I got to experience real life there, and that led me to Japan and so on and so forth. So kind of like building, you know, like little by little by little, and now it's at the point where, well, I don't want to live all my time in Philadelphia. Like, it's cool to come home, but I want to spend months different places to really feel the culture.
And you will. Yeah. I mean, you're walking through this door right now. Who knows? Maybe you'll spend a few years somewhere else at some point. And that opportunity, or you'll take that. You'll make that choice, just like we're encouraging other people to make that choice at some point. So the thing that resonates with me, what you're saying there, is that when your parents made you go.
Right. They made me, literally said, like,
yeah,
you kinda should go. And the choice is yours, but it really wasn't. They're like, we bought you the ticket. I was like, no.
It's kind of like you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
And sometimes, I don't want to say you need to be pushed out the door, because obviously it can, you know, we can attract people to travel through pictures and these sites and stuff like that. But that's kind of what maybe you needed.
Yeah,
and you can maybe almost thank them and say, hey, you know, I really got to do, you know, building a church or whatever you did there. It was probably a cool experience.
Right.
And the people that you met that made it so interesting.
Right.
That's my guess.
Yeah.
Even though I don't know the details.
Completely. And after that, I was a junior in college, so I couldn't do study abroad my senior year then. It was too close. And I had always, after I came back from Paris, I'm like, man, like, what am I thinking? Why am I not studying abroad?
Yeah.
Because you're paying the same amount. You're going with people your age. Classes are going to be super easy probably, because they know you're they know you're there for the culture. But I couldn't at that point. And that is why when I went back after 4 years of teaching high school, I went back and did a master's. And I thought, okay, when I have to do an internship, I'm getting an internship abroad no matter what, because I hadn't had – it was like my study abroad.
And that's what the Switzerland thing was.
Right. And I made it work. And I went to Switzerland. And it had always been like a regret of mine that I didn't do it. And that's why I tell younger people, if you're in college and you can afford to do this study abroad – take the opportunity, because my sister was more daring than me. She went to Australia, she went to New Zealand, and you know, now she lives in Spain. Like, so she kind of got that before me. Wow. And now we both have that travel bug.
That's a good point is that when you have that opportunity, study abroad is a great segue into understanding the value of travel.
Yeah.
Because you're in school, so you kind of feel like, oh, it's school. I'm not taking a year off to travel. I'm going to school. And, you know, because we're still programmed. Got to go to college. I mean,
right.
Not that you have to. I mean, I don't believe that anymore. Not that there's anything wrong with college, but that was my doorway into it. And of course, a lot of people, it was their doorway into it. So
it's a very easy way to kill two birds with one stone. You're doing exactly what you do at home, but you're probably having cooler experiences and meeting new people. So. You know, there's still beer in other countries, too. So
exactly. In fact, you don't have to be 21 oftentimes to legally enjoy it.
There you go. So what have been some of your favorites then in places that you travel that you'd recommend to other people? And I'm sure there's a ton. But what sticks in your mind is really these great places you've been?
So I'm 40 now. I have three kids that are three and under right now. So it's maybe a little bit different, but I've always had the same answer to this question, and it's India.
All right.
India is probably my favorite place because it's just so in your face. I mean, it's, you know, you're walking down the street and a Rolls Royce drives by you and someone's taking a dump right there. I mean, literally on the side of the road, and it's just, and there's cows. And of course those are in big cities, but you know, it's just a fat, you know, bit huge Himalayas in the north. Beaches all around it, you know, a billion plus people, entrepreneurship, poverty, government. It's just got everything there that really challenged me the first time I went there. It still is when I go back. I mean, it's a challenge, but I like stretching my rubber band because I never go back to that original size after I leave. And I just like it. It's been a huge independent travel location for, you know, decades. I'm not putting some off the beaten place there, but that India is just fantastic. And of course that it's changing a lot. First time I was there in 97, last time I was there, I think it's 2009. You could just see the growth there in the middle class is growing tremendously. People our age just have different opportunities that just didn't exist 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, so they're, you know, in many ways they're pretty happy, the middle class there. So versus there's a pretty big divide there before. So that's one place. Now I've been going to New Zealand most winters this winter. We will be going as a family, but I just rent a place down there and we don't move around, you know?
Okay.
We go down for the winter, a place called the Hope Beach right near Whakatane, about 4 hours south of Auckland. And I have a little office there to do my work. And, you know, I could surf and mountain bike and spend time with my family in nice weather. I don't really like the winters anymore. It's probably about a wash. The way we're able to do it from a cost perspective, but the happiness factor is way up.
Yeah, there you go. You know,
trying to get my wife to think about other cheaper locations.
Okay,
but with such young kids, we're
You want to make sure it's okay for them
totally
as well.
Totally comfortable. Yeah,
right.
I mean, we literally have 6-month-old infants.
Right,
two of them.
Yeah, twins, right?
Yeah, just like you, except these are identical.
So. Ah, yeah. Me and my sister, not identical, believe it or not.
Yeah, well, that's what, your parents hit two eggs. I hit one egg, and then it split.
There you go.
Oh, my.
I think India, I've been there once, and it was for 3 weeks. And challenging is the perfect word. There's nothing that describes it more. I mean, we had done Southeast Asia a bunch, me and my wife. We got to India. We thought, okay, this will be a little bit of a challenge, but we've been other places out of our comfort zones. We got to India, and it was shock. Just in every sense of the word, it took us like 3 days to get out of our buddy's apartment who we were staying with, because not to get out, but I mean to really get out and feel comfortable, because you know, she was worried about the people staring at her. She couldn't wear short shorts. Like, it was just so different from anything we had experienced. And I forget who said it, but someone said there was two type of travelers, those who had been to India and those who hadn't. And I was just like, that's right.
I could see that. And the thing about India is, you know, the longer you stay, you do get a certain comfort level with it.
Sure.
And I remember the first time I went, it was 2 or 3 months. I don't know how long. But I do remember after a period of time, I was at least more comfortable with it than I was at first.
Sure.
You know, like sometimes you're on a train and it just stops. Why does this train stop?
No one knows.
When will it start? When are we going to get there? You know, of course, our time-driven society, you know, we're used to that. That is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But after a while, you just, okay, let's have another cup of chai.
Right.
All is good. And then, you know, you do kind of adjust.
Yeah.
Straight. It takes a while, though.
Yeah.
And you might not be able to do it. You definitely won't be able to do it in a short trip.
Right.
So that's one of the cool things about it. It really stretches that comfort zone. So that's a cool place. But, you know, the more, like I said, the more I travel, I realize it's about the people.
Yeah.
More than anything, it's always about the people. So
you
go there because there might be a mountain or an ocean or a, you know, a whatever. But after a while, the mountains sort of do look the same after a while.
Right, right.
To a degree. I mean, you know, there are some bigger ones or more beautiful, but, you know, the people. Yeah. So how about you? What's your...
Well, I love Thailand. I love Southeast Asia as a whole. There's a lot of places I still need to go and want to go, but if I had to go back to one place that I've been, I want to go back to Japan as a tourist, because I was working there and we did a lot of traveling, but I think it'd be cool to go back and just do whatever we wanted. But if I had to stay somewhere for a little while, that I've already been, Thailand to me was just, it has everything and it's cheap. I think, like you said, the idea of being cheap and the idea of it costing less than me living here, that's a freeing feeling because you don't have to worry about stuff. Whereas, if, you know, you go rent a place in London, you know, you could stay in your house all day and still spend more money than you ever would in Thailand. So
here's my question for you.
Yeah.
Why don't you and the missus go to Chiang Mai next winter?
Yeah, well, we're thinking, actually, we're talking about, we have a wedding in October, and not our wedding, but my best friend, and after that, we're thinking about going to, maybe she loves Bali. I'm fine with Bali. I'll take that too. So we're looking to maybe go there and try to do some stuff there and, you know, live the location independent stuff. So it's definitely on our radar, something we really want to do.
Cool. I don't know if you know, we actually started we had what we called an office in Bali in 2003.
Okay.
I don't know if you read that on our timeline, but Nick, you know, one of the founders of Boots and All, moved there in 2003, and we did a daily travel guide to Bali called Bali Blog.
Okay.
And it's not, we don't update it that much anymore, but there's still a lot of good information there. But the big thing about it is I was talking to Nick about maybe spending a winter there recently, and it's a lot more expensive than it was, but if you stay outside some of the tourist areas.
Sure.
You could still have a, you know, it's become kind of like the luxury place for Australians to go to. There's a lot of villas.
That's true. You know, the Eat, still, Pray, you know, Love crowd, too.
Totally. But if you go into East Bali and some of these other places, you can get a great place and probably keep your expenses lower. That'd be awesome. So I hope to see you there.
Yeah, Hopefully Bali blog version, too.
Yeah, well, I'd love to bring my family there. But I don't know. I gotta work on that, too, so.
So what are, we'll let you go in a second, but what are some things that you want, where are places you want to go in the future, and where do you see Boots and All headed in the future?
Totally. Well, for where I want to go, I have not been to South America. So
me neither. Let's go together.
Yeah, let's go. Can you and your wife help take care of the kids?
She loves it. She loves it. She's a nanny. She's on off and on nanny for a family whenever we come back here anyway. So there we go.
Let's go. But I'm really attracted to Chile for a few different reasons. You know, it's this long country that has all these different microclimates and, you know, the mountains there. So I want to check. But, you know, I'd like to go down there. But where else? I'm not that interested in Europe.
Okay.
I never have been. Not that there's anything wrong with
sure.
it. It feels more similar to America. I still encourage people to go. There's
of
nothing
course.
Wrong with it. I'm just not as attracted to it.
Yeah. I'm personally more attracted to Eastern Europe than Western Europe. I mean, I'd go to Western Europe in a heartbeat. There's plenty of countries I have to see. But Eastern Europe really holds my attention because it's a grittier, cheaper, newer kind of place. So.
And that's what I like about independent travels. You can get to these places that are changing. You know, I've been saying this for a while, like Southeast Asia, parts of Africa, Eastern Europe. I've been saying that for 15 years, is that they are changing kind of quickly. So if you don't go now, you know, and they already have changed.
Yeah.
And, you know, every place changes, right? I mean, but to me, London is like, you know.
It's cool,
it's totally cool, but I don't know how much that's changed in the past 15 years. Now, I'm sure a London expert would say, "Oh, Sean, you're wrong. It's blah 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 blah." You know, but
Big Ben's still there.
You know, there's a London Eye, but you know, it doesn't seem like, you know, sometimes the socioeconomic changes in the country, which are about people,
Yeah.
That's what's so interesting as you see those changes or right before it changes. You know, right when the wall came down in Eastern Europe, I mean, what an exciting time to be
right,
there.
Right.
And it, many of these macroeconomic trends, which affect people, are still happening because it's only been 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like a long time.
You're living through history.
I know. Yeah. I mean, it's, you might, oh, you're too late. 20 years. No, not really.
No.
Not at all. I mean, there might even be better infrastructure in some of these places today. There definitely is.
Right.
You'll see a lot of long-term or expats move to these sorts of places. So those are some of the places on my radar. As far as boots and all, we're just focusing hardcore on long-term travel. You know, we want to be synonymous with long-term travel. We built this Indie Engine. I don't know if you've seen our Round the World 30 online e-course program. So you can sign up for how to plan your trip in 30 days. It's a free course.
Awesome.
And every day you get a lesson plan, an action plan, and a few articles. This is the highest rated product at Boots and All of all time. 9.10 out of 10. Over 3,500 people have taken it now. We have a Round the World course, and then we have a family course, so specifically for family. We're coming out with a career break / sabbatical course.
Awesome.
We're thinking about doing a study abroad version of this because every group of people has slightly different concerns.
And, right.
It's just really because there's a lot of fear in some people's minds around this. This course kind of helps overcome those fears, budget spreadsheets and all sorts of stuff like that. So, and then just continuing to cultivate a community around independent travel. So those are some of the big things we've been working on. This is our 15-year anniversary. So if you've ever seen Boots and All before, you know, I encourage you to check us out again because a lot of things have changed.
You're having a big party for the 15th year.
We're probably going to relaunch this fall. We're talking about just because, I don't know, over the years, we started doing a lot of different things.
Sure.
Travis, like a lot of different things. Some of the things that were not core to who we are, just because we could and we were learning. And we've really drawn back into what we think we can be number one in. Just like I talked about at TBEX 2.5 years ago. I really took my own medicine there.
It's hard sometimes to take your message and see how it fits into what you're actually doing.
Yeah. And I knew that we needed to bring it back in and focus on being number one at one thing versus trying to be number one at five different things.
Because
unless you're, you know, even Google and these huge companies have a hard time doing that. So if you're a small band like that, so that's what Boots and All is about. We want to be synonymous with long-term travel, and we're a private company. So I've been doing this for 15 years. I can see myself doing it for another 15 or 30. So
then your kids can take over.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. You know, here's the other thing we're talking about doing. I forgot to mention, you'd probably be interested in this, Travis, is we see long-term travel as the best way to get an education, a boots-on-the-ground education. And how can we help more people that are not doing that do long-term travel because it makes such a big difference in their lives? Look at the travel that you did, how it impacted your life.
Sure.
It's still playing itself out right now.
Right. Oh, right? 100%.
So, and then there's lots of, let's just call it youth, that may not even know that this is an opportunity. So we're going to be setting up a nonprofit here in the next few months that somehow helps fund and spreads the messaging around the value of long-term travel. Because I'd like it to see it as a curriculum.
Yeah.
You know,
the teacher in me loves that.
Yeah,
loves
it. It's like once you're 18, go around the world for a year, do it on a budget, something, you know, that you're not going to be eating baked beans and camping necessarily, but because it's a better investment than college, in my opinion, in many circumstances, because you're spending 20 grand a year in college. You could definitely travel around the world on 20 years.
When you're
18 and have a better time, learn more, come back with maybe a better idea of what you might want to do or where, because you don't know what you don't know. So that's really, I think, the purpose of Boots and All, to get people to do this sort of travel because it makes the world a better place.
100%. Yeah, travel is the best education, hands down. I'm living proof of it. You say you are too, and that's kind of one of the messages I try to convey to anyone who talks to me about is just go and do it. You're going to learn more doing it than I even know. You know, I don't know exactly what you're going to learn, but I know you're going to learn a lot. And they come back. And
the good thing about it is you're kind of tricked, because when you go traveling, you don't think it's about learning.
Right.
You think it's about partying or whatever it is that you like.
Yeah.
That's why you go. And then you come back and you think, geez, I really learned something.
Yeah, it's like those video games that teach kids how to do math or something like that. They're tricking them into it.
Right. It's not like a classroom. That's what's so great about it.
Yeah, I agree. Cool. That's awesome, Sean. Some amazing stuff in the pipeline. And your willingness to just continue to be out there on the internet and engage with travelers and kind of champion Indian travel and long-term travel, even though you've grown a little older, is a complete inspiration to me. So I just want to personally thank you for that.
Cool. Well, thank you, Travis. I'm really glad we got a chance to talk today.
Yeah. And before I let you go, if you wouldn't mind, tell people how they can connect with you and where they can find Boots and All on the web and stuff like
that. So we're at Boots and All on Twitter. We're bootsandall.com, BOOTSNALL.com. Everything's linked from our homepage. And I am at S.E. Keener. Okay. On Twitter. So those are the best ways to get a hold of us.
Yeah, and you guys are pretty active on social media, I know. You do some neat stuff on Twitter.
We do. Well, we're on it every day.
Okay.
You know, we have people that do it because they want to. And we also do a round the world chat on Wednesday, 12:30 Pacific Standard Time or 3:30 Eastern Standard Time. We take a long term travel topic. And we do 10 questions on it, and we talk about it. And then probably every other week or so, I'll have a special guest on to talk about it. So I'm going to invite you, and we're going to talk about travel hacks.
There we go. That's perfect.
Okay? And so we'll get on Google Hangouts, and I'll grill you even more.
I'd love to turn around and be on the hot seat once.
We have fun. I mean, we have fun. And then, you know, so you can watch it or just go on Twitter. And it's been a lot of fun. So that's what I mean about community. It's, you know, it's everywhere.
Right.
And is that ours? I mean,
you just help it along.
We run it, I suppose, you know, but cool.
And everything will be linked in the show notes on the blog at extrapackofpeanuts.com. Listeners, if you're looking to take a trip that defies this regular standard travel, you know, you want to visit multiple destinations, long-term travel, you've got to head over to Boots and All. It's helped me tremendously. You can see firsthand the awesome resources they have. And if you're planning a trip, make sure to check out the Indy Flight Search Engine. Sign up is completely free and everything, so no worries about that. And if you guys do have questions for Sean that we haven't answered here, we've talked about a lot, but maybe you got some questions we haven't answered, you can leave a comment over on the post at extrapackofpeanuts.com or connect with Sean on Twitter at S.E. Keener. And I'll make sure Sean gets them if you make the post.
Yeah. I'll make sure I pay attention to the comment thread there. No
awesome.
Problem.
Sean, once again, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, sir.
If you like the podcast, guys, you want to see it grow even larger, put a smile on my face, you can give it a rating on iTunes. We really appreciate it. Thanks for joining us, everyone. And until next time, happy free travels. Yeah, well, you don't have to worry.